Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer, you'd rather have a chicken sandwich than a burger, Williams.
Okay, yeah. I like
How
chicken sandwiches.
How dare you?
Whatever. Chicken sandwiches are delicious.
Uh-huh. Speaking of chicken, we also got with us intern slash part-timer slash stenographer slash coffee bringer, yet bringer of no coffee, Amy, with us as well.
I like charbroiled burgers. I don't know where this chicken thing's coming from. Uh-huh.
Also, she brought something this week.
I did bring Chinese food, so technically not on the burger standards, but you know.
And speaking of chicken, we got the egg of Amy over here with us. Junior filmlosopher Sarah is back.
Hi.
What is that? This is literally a, why are you, this is a audio podcast. Nobody can see you.
It was never established.
It was never established.
Oh, well. Congratulations.
Breaking lore.
What lore?
The lore of the film.
The lore of the intern.
Oh my God.
The intern.
I got people breaking audio and breaking eardrums. We got a great show in store if your ears aren't bleeding by this point. We are going to be talking about the recently released combo Fox Disney. We'll call it a Fizney film.
That's not a good.
That sounds like it's going to fizzle.
The Bob's Burgers movie. So stick around as we dive into that and more. But before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers. And on Twitter and Instagram at Filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. We got over 300 episodes, allegedly. And we have everything from romance, anime, action, comedy, discussions, anything that you're looking for, we got it. So head on over there, check us out. Also, you can check us out on any streaming platform for podcasts, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora. Tune in. You can tune into each and every one of those places. Listen to us. Subscribe. Hear what we got. Hey, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it. Also, check us out on the social webs. At the end of the show, we'll give you those links and more. But we got a great and exciting show for you. And there is something that before we dive into that, I've been wanting to do because we haven't had a chance to do it for whatever reasons. And that is movie news. There we go. Audio cues are funny that way, so, you know.
Fantastic.
It's always fantastic. We got a couple of pieces of movie news today, and at the top of our list, Joker 2.
No, thank you.
Todd Phillips, the Joker with Joaquin Phoenix, has been a cinematic pariah, if you will, for the last, how long has it been out? About a year or two? I don't even remember.
I don't care, but no thank you.
Well, either way, on Todd Phillips' Instagram page, he did post a little spoiler teaser kind of thing of the script for the new film. And to be quite frank, I can't read it because I have no idea what it says. But it says something to the effect of Joker 2. So we'll just keep it at that. Can anybody read it?
It looks. Is this going to be a French movie?
I don't know.
It was something like Madness for Two, but in French.
Joker Folie à Deux?
Yeah.
Maybe. Who knows? Todd Phillips, use English. Reached. We speak American. This movie comes at a very unique kind of situation in the midst of everything going on in America, everything going on around the world. And that movie kind of seemed, and I know I'm probably going to make a lot of people mad. It kind of seemed like a what is that? What is the name of of those people who are like, who can't? Yes, it seemed like no joke. It seemed like the crown jewel for incel, incel community. Like this seemed like the primary movie for every incel to say, "See, we're valid and we have validation because of Joaquin Phoenix." This movie just really kind of rubbed me the wrong way in every single facet of it, and the fact that they're making a sequel kind of scares me. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think, Spencer?
I think it's a dumb idea, and I was happy when the first one was over, because I was like, well, at least Joaquin Phoenix said he wasn't going to do a second one, And you know. I know. And now I'm upset about this. I don't
He should work for Disney because he lies.
I mean, I'm sure he will at some point.
They're
running out of people for that Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Seriously, all of Hollywood is going to be a part of the
Marvel. We're all going to be on
I have an opportunity to be a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I basically want to be
everybody needs an intern
from Ghostbusters in the Marvel
Cinematic Universe. Everybody needs an intern, so Amy, you might have a space. There you go.
True.
Sarah, did you see the first Joker film?
No, I did not.
Okay, good. So that we don't have to worry about you seeing the second one either. The unique thing about this movie is that it was one of those types of movies that shouldn't have gotten as much praise as it did. And you wonder, like, what were all those, like, critics and reviewers who liked it? What were they smoking or what were they doing? Because
they weren't reading actual Joker books or understanding what was actually going on.
It wasn't a good Joker movie.
Nope.
Secondly, it wasn't even a good movie in general. Like, it had a very unique color palette. I'll give it that. If you had said to me that this movie was just about mental illness and the depravity, and I think we actually talked about this, didn't we,
mm-hmm.
in the review. If you had told me this was a movie just about mental illness and the depravity of somebody who's, you know, on a slippery slope down into this, you know, pit of madness, and really kind of just commentating on the social atmosphere and conversation about how the U.S., you know, treats mental illness,
mm-hmm.
I would say, okay, maybe this has a spot without all the jokery things interjected. But then you put the label of, oh, this is a Joker movie. Oh, they call him Joker because he was called that by Robert De Niro in the movie. Mm-hmm. So it's weird why they're creating a second one when, honestly, I felt like if they were looking to do the best they could with that particular character in that particular franchise, they should have left it after the first one.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing I'm really concerned about is Joaquin got literally, like, he was abusing himself to get to as thin as he needed to for production.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I'm not saying he looks terrible, but I don't want somebody to go through that again simply because you're like, oh, and this is the one where he meets Harley. Yeah. Like, I don't need it.
That would be horrible.
Well, and calling it madness for two or madness of two is assuming that there is,
there's
two people that we're dealing with. And
there's really only one other person,
unless they're trying to bring in the three Jokers storyline, which no. they're not smart enough to do.
Why
that.
Would you
three
say
Jokers
such a?
Have you heard the title?
Have you seen that?
Yeah,
or have you read
I'm
it?
I'm vaguely aware of it.
Don't do that.
Because let's be honest. To be very upfront, the only reason they're going to call it a madness of two is that they can attach or hitch him to somebody.
Is that
else.
What that translates to?
It's the folly of two. So
I don't speak French. So I don't. You're looking at me like you should know this.
A folly is a madness. So yes.
I don't know.
Why is this even in French?
Because why would it be an American?
Why would it be an American? Yeah, that's that. There you go. All these people are wondering the same thing. So all we got is just the current draft of the screenplay and a black and white image of Todd Phillips himself. So who knows what it's going to delve into and what it's going to become. It's in the Instagram page.
You mean Joaquin
Phoenix?
Yeah,
that's Joaquin Phoenix.
That's Joaquin Phoenix. His page literally says Phoenix across the
front. Oh, my bad. It is him. He's smoking a cigarette, looking balding. And
he looks like he's already like thinking about it aggressively. And I'm like, please don't. I'm like, if you want to, you know, I would take a sequel to Her, which was a great movie, but I don't need a sequel to Her. I would take that.
What I want, a sequel to the latest Batman. The Batman. I like that one.
The Batman, again.
So who knows what's going to happen with this trailer or with this whatever, or with this new film coming out. I don't know if people are going to talk about it, boycott it, get excited. Who knows? All I know
is pretty confident if he's willing to be like, hey, I'm doing a thing.
Right. Here's my Insta swams. Take a look. I don't know. I'm not too excited for it. I'm pretty sure there's going to be a bunch of very unique and government watched individuals who will be excited for it. But
so excited.
All in all, who knows when it's going to debut. Sarah, where is that episode? What's the episode where we talked about it?
It's Lesson 186. It's kind of a funny story.
Ah, there you go. I think
it's
that's
a great
not.
Subtitle, but that was such a tease. That's a no-no.
Well, I think it was in context to what we were talking about in the episode.
Yeah, but that's not kind of a funny story. I mean, that sounds like, I'm like, oh, really? And then I'm like, wait, no. No, thank you.
Man, that's like our version of Disney trailers right
there. That is the Disney trailer.
Well, guess what? If you're listening to this and you're intrigued, go listen to what the heck we were talking about in that episode. But transitioning over to the next topic that we have for movie news, they just announced, or they actually just dropped the Predator prequel Prey trailer for Hulu.
Everybody snacks to the clicking sound.
So, for a long time now, we have been, you know, subjected to everybody's interpretation of the Predator franchise.
Except for me. I only experienced the first one very recently.
Oh, that's true. You haven't seen
it. I avoided everything else because I was like, I don't know.
Because we had The Predator, which is the most recent one, which was kind of like a reboot, I guess.
Was it the...
That's
that was
the one
the
with Thomas Jane and... Keegan-Michael Key, and yep. And the guy from Suicide Squad and The Suicide Squad. Mm-hmm. And then we also had Predators, which is that one with Adrian Brody and Lawrence Fishburne, Michelle Rodriguez, Danny Trejo, a number of different folks. Oh, Topher Grace. Topher Grace is actually in it.
Topher Grace.
This is a far cry from what those were, because those were just cash grabs. This seems like a genuine, in my personal opinion, it looks like a genuine effort to create a spiritual prequel to the franchise. And I'm excited for it. I mean, Spencer, did you get a chance to see it?
I did. At first I was like, oh, here comes another cash grab. But then like you know, halfway through the trailer, I was like, okay, like, this looks like it could actually work. Like,
yeah,
people seem like they're actually, you know, intelligent in this movie and won't just be mowed down because they're idiots, except for one guy. But, least. Like, I'm feeling optimistic about this one.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Essentially, it's about a Comanche warrior living in the Great Plains during the early 1700s who finds her tribe threatened by this unknown danger. She essentially sets out to search for the threat and is confronted by a predator, pitting her in a vicious fight for her life.
And the trailer does a good job of making it seem like she's the one person who's not going to get instantly mowed down by this.
Yes.
Person.
Yeah, it does a great job. And I'm not sure if this is a film or a series. I think it's a series. Hmm. But either way, whether if it's a movie or a series, it is a series.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
So it's something that I'm looking forward to, and oddly enough, we were talking about release schedules just before we got on, and Hulu does their due diligence and like makes people wait, so it's like, oh, okay, we need to wait for the next episode.
Wait for it. I couldn't not make
and
that
so
joke.
And so, if they're going to do that with this, I'm actually anxious to like digest this regularly and see how it goes as a whole. But Amy, you seeing the very first Predator not too long ago, how do you feel this gives in terms of homage to the original, if not gives a credence to everything that it's doing?
Well, it seemed even just in watching the trailer that it made space and it carried the same kind of, which is odd for a trailer, but it carried the same kind of presence that the first movie does. As old as the first movie is, you'd think it would kind of be stale, but it feels like she's smart. The main protagonist we're following, not only is she smart, but she's determined and driven, and she's like, I'm going to kill this thing because I don't want to be killed. So she has a very third act of the first Predator type of vibe to her. Mm-hmm. For Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, but also it looks beautifully shot, which I'm like, okay, surprises. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
And I didn't roll my eyes at this, which is something that I'm usually like, oh, it's a reboot. It's a, let's extend this a bajillion times over and I'll roll my eyes. This, I was like, huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Prediction. I'm going to say that this movie is going to tie into Billy's lineage from the first movie, because how can you miss that great opportunity? I'm just saying, Billy was the Native American warrior tracker for, you know, Arnold and his team. So I'm like, why can you how can you miss out on that great opportunity of saying, like, at the very end, like, oh, my son, you know, or my great grandson or whatever, you see Billy and he experiences it when he's a kid and then blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know. Maybe that's like what kind of perpetuates him to join the military or whatever. I don't know. But I feel like that should be a great opportunity to not miss.
I like it.
So, yeah, this actually debuts on August 5th. On Hulu, so if you have the streaming service, you know, you have that to look forward to.
Isn't there another big comic book adaptation that comes out on August 5th that I'm supposed to be aware of as well?
I don't know, and you're adding things to the schedule, but
I'm,
sure.
I'm sorry. No. So, Sandman. The Sandman is supposed to be coming out on Netflix, and I thought it was on August 5th. Neil Gaiman's adaptation. I don't know.
I was going to Netflix. I thought
this was Netflix picked it up. No, Netflix picked it up ages ago, but they dropped this week the release date as well as a trailer, and it looks a little something something.
So do you not have the release date, or do you?
Because I thought you were literally Googling the release date. This is where
you were the one who asked.
I didn't ask. She brought it up.
No, I'm bringing up that she asked.
Yeah, you're the one who asked. You brought it up.
Okay.
Because I'm legit looking right now and I can't see.
And I'm over here trying
August
to produce.
August 5th, sorry.
Yes. My gosh, and take control of this show. And apparently Amy's doing her own thing over there.
August 5th, sorry.
So, okay, August 5th, Netflix, The Sandman, who cares? But we're talking about Prey. Either way, check it out if you get a chance. I've lost control of everything. So, anyway, back to our main topic at hand. Yeah. So if you have Hulu, you have Netflix, whatever, check out those properties, check out those opportunities for really great things. So, but we're going to transition over into our main topic, and that is the discussion of the evening. We are talking about, and it's weird to say it, but the Bob's Burgers movie, right? Isn't that the title of it?
Yep.
That's weird. This was a movie that, honestly, I've been looking forward to. I've been a fan of Bob's Burgers for a little while. We brought Sarah on because Sarah's been a fan of the show for a while. And so, Spencer, not so much. Amy, sporadically here and there. We're going to dive into this and kind of get into the meat of it. But before we do, Spencer, give us those official synopsis goodnesses.
While Bob and Linda struggle to keep their business afloat, the kids try to solve a mystery that could save their family's restaurant. As the dangers mount, these underdogs help each other to find hope and fight it to get their back behind the counter where they belong.
Directed by the series creator Lauren Bouchard and Bernard Derriman, the film stars the original vocal cast of H. John Benjamin, Dan Mintz, Eugene Merman, Larry Murphy, John Roberts, Kristen Schaal, David Wayne, Zach Galifianakis, and Kevin Kline. Unique tidbit about this movie, while the movie adaptation of Bob's Burgers was getting made, they also had the 11th season of the show going on and the movie in production back to back. So that's pretty intense. It almost makes you want to go back to the 11th season and see if like they weren't kind of double dipping and putting things in both seasons, or both the season and the film. But as I said, this was a Fizney movie, a Fox Disney.
Stop making Fizney a thing. It's never going to happen.
This was one of those movies that was a part of the Fox Corporation type thing. They had the rights to it, and then with the conglomerate, assimilation of both Fox and Disney, it's now a Disney property.
Yep. Which is weird to say. Monopolies are fun, apparently.
Nobody likes Monopoly.
Nobody does.
So this was a movie that was on our radar for a little while, but we didn't really think much of it until we began to revisit the episodes. I know I was rewatching them. Sarah said she was going to start rewatching them because she wanted to be a part of the show for this one. So we made efforts.
I just like the show. It's fun. It's fun and comfortable. Not comfortable. A comfort kind of type show.
So I think that kind of transitions into our first question for the evening in terms of our experience. And my biggest question that I want to ask you guys, especially you two on the other side of the table who have no idea what's going on and Amy's doing her bills on the phone. We're talking about adult animation experiences, whether if it's, and I say adult with a very loose kind of interpretation, anything that's not meant essentially for the child, you know, audience. Because, I mean, let's be frank. There's been a big shift in offerings to adults that cater to that childlike mindset for, you know, millennials and whatnot. I mean, take a look at like The Simpsons. You got Family Guy. You got South Park. You got Rick and Morty. Everything on Adult Swim in the evenings. You got, you know, Bob's Burgers is a lesser, more maybe PG, PG-13 style type thing. And there's like a scale for it. But I think the majority of them really do kind of lean heavily on the more older audiences. And so my question to you guys is, what is your experience in terms of, you know, whether if it's the animation domination time, you know, time frame on Fox or whatever, or if it's like Adult Swim's, you know, Rick and Morty or whatever else they offer, things like that. Spencer.
Yeah, I remember watching this a lot more when I was a kid to a teenager than I do as an adult.
Bob's Burgers?
No, like
Okay.
Like in the time slot of like The Simpsons, Kingdom of the Hill.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, I love King of the Hill.
Yeah, King of the Hill is great. Mm-hmm. Like Peggy Hill is like my favorite character on that show because she's so ridiculous.
Spa Peggy and meatballs. She tries to make everything her own, and she makes spaghetti and meatballs, and she calls it Spa Peggy and meatballs. So sorry.
Yeah. No.
It's a great show.
Yeah, it's a fantastic show. Yeah, actually, so. Now you listed those off. I guess I had quite a large experience with these kinds of shows. I generally like most of them. I like the ones that fit my kind of humor. There's quite a few that don't, and I find confusing. Pretty much anything by, what are the names? Tim and Eric. I'm like,
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Not and that wasn't them. Always animation with Tim and Eric either.
What about you, Amy?
So my adult animation goes back pretty far, so far that there was a movie that was brought up on a Watch Mojo list that I had seen that was adult animation. So that was sketchy.
Okay, hold on. Time out. Because no. Here's the thing. She probably remembers the title, but
for Fritz the Cat?
Oh, who directed Fritz the Cat?
Bashke?
The whole name? I mean, it's literally...
Is it Ralph Bashke?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was not appropriate at all.
When did you see that?
Oh, my gosh. Late teens.
Like it, where? On like...
It was on late at night, and I thought it was a cartoon. So I was kind of following suit. I did like Aqua Teen Hunger Force, yeah. Metalopolis, or I cannot say it.
This is a very hard word.
Metalopolix.
Yeah. Whatever. Frisky Dingo, which was the first time that I actually heard... the actor that plays Bob for Bob.
H. Shawn Benjamin?
Yeah, that's the first time I heard him was in Frisky Dingo. And then you've got Venture Brothers. So I had...
I started watching that again.
See? So there was that and Simpsons. And it was kind of all over the place, but for the most part, Adult Swim had the biggest collection for me to be able to watch it. And so it was late teens, early 20s, and I kind of... pardon me. I picked and choose what I wanted to watch, and then some choices were good, some choices were bad, and I consistently quote just like 3 or 4 lines from The Simpsons, and I've seen almost all of them, so it's problematic. Yeah.
All The Simpsons?
Yeah.
Okay. In terms of my experience, I mean, I remember way back when I was 4 or 5, being an older brother, so this was the way nights went in my home.
It sounds sketchy already.
My family or my mom, because my dad would usually be working late, my mom would be in the living room, or my mom and my aunt would be in the living room. They'd be watching TV, and I would have to go to bed at the same time my brother did, but if my brother went to sleep, I could get up and go to the living room and go watch TV with them. And they usually didn't care what was on, so I saw everything from like Beavis and Butthead, Daria, Duckman. I saw things like, just a lot of that. King of the Hill, a lot of the inspiration for Hank Hill from Beavis and Butthead. Mike Judge is a genius. And then that rolling over into, obviously, The Simpsons. I wasn't really a big fan of The Simpsons, only until around Halloween when they would do the...
Episodes were pretty good from The Simpsons.
The Treehouse of Horrors.
Yeah.
I loved every single one of those. As soon as they came on Disney Plus, I literally binged every year. That was the only thing I watched. Boom, 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 boom. And then I got into, obviously, like with Cartoon Network, Adult Swim, everything that they were dishing out, everything from like Moral Oral to, you know, Rick and Morty to when they actually took over with Family Guy, and Family Guy was doing their episodes on there.
Futurama, too.
Futurama. Yeah. All of those. Like, I was watching all of Space Ghost from Coast to Coast. then as I got older, I started realizing, like, there's only so much that you can like from certain shows. Like, Family Guy was good up until a certain season, and then it just kind of like started circling the drain. Like I said, with Simpsons, it was just mainly the Treehouse of Horrors episodes. Rick and Morty has been kind of a consistent one. Surprisingly, I keep feeling like the next season for Rick and Morty is going to be the one that just completely blows it, and I'm like, I guess I'm done. And then the next season comes out, and it's like, oh, great. Now I got to wait for the next season.
3 years from now.
Bob's Burgers was a surprise to me, because at first I actually had pushed it off as like, it's not funny enough, or it's not pushing the envelope enough, or it's not whatever. And not that I needed it to be, but for me at the time, it was like, well, I was watching all these other things. I guess, you know, the bar was already set, you know, Morty, you know, that kind of thing. So when it came to actually started watching it, I actually found that it was enjoyable. There was like wholesome stories to it. Yeah. And I'm like, why isn't this on regular TV for like kids? Like, it's just as good, except certain parts, like, you know, people like Marshmallow and all them, you know, and they're just very...
Isn't it on Fox?
It is on Fox, but it's on Fox Evenings. I mean, like in the like 3 o'clock time slot or something, right next to Power Rangers, you know?
Worked really well.
But no, like things, but like mainstays, Spencer hit a mainstay, like, with King of the Hill, the one thing that made that show funny was because I knew people like that back home. Like the people who would sit out front in their yard and just drink a beer while looking at an engine and all talking about, oh boy, I tell you what, that look there looks like the alternator, brother. You got to go and get it. And I knew people who did that. And so it just, it made it funny and unique for situations where even when I moved out here from Texas, it made me homesick at times, like, oh, Boomhauer, you know, that kind of stuff. So the question to Sarah I have is, how did you get into watching Bob's Burgers?
So my introduction to Bob's Burgers, hilariously enough, was before I accidentally stumbled across it, because I thought that I wasn't aware of Adult Swim and their time slot. When my family used to have like live TV, I accidentally clicked on Cartoon Network because I'm like, oh my gosh, Steven Universe might
be. We're not getting you in trouble, are we?
No.
Just saying.
My parental figure is probably already aware of this. But I clicked on it, and surprisingly enough, the episode that was the two-parter in, I believe, season 3. But it's where the wharf is going to get reconstructed.
Bob saves and destroys the wharf at this, or something like that. Okay.
But it was the second half of that, and I was like, oh no, something's going on with them. Oh, and I got engaged, and then I went, oh wait, this is Adult Swim. And so I logged off. But
was Bob's Burgers on Adult Swim for a time?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. By the way, side note, I just saw what Spencer wrote in the notes next to Joker 2 confirmed. He put no thank you.
Oh, no, I didn't.
That was me.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's funny.
That's better if it was you, Spencer.
Go ahead.
But after that, I just with quarantine and everything, I was like, I need something kind of like to not fill my time, but to kind of bring comfort and not. Is solace the right word?
Yeah.
Solace,
yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, the sad thing about quarantine is it really put everybody in a really funky space where literally the things that made most introverts comfortable and happy made everybody happy. So being in front of a TV, watching something that you're familiar with, or, you know, doing a hobby that you'd used to, you know, see people do in the corners of like the school cafeterias, or, you know, the person at the office who did that one thing all the time, whatever, it became the norm for everybody. And so I think everybody during quarantine learned how to be a little bit more respectful to introverts. But I get what you're saying.
And then when they came back, they're just like, no.
Yeah. So after seeing the movie, I'm assuming everybody here saw the film, Spencer.
Yes, I saw it.
Yes, I saw it at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
I want to know
when it came out.
I want to know your guys' first impressions right out the gate, starting with Spencer.
Oh, Yeah, so I have this thing where occasionally in songs, I have a really hard time understanding what people are saying. And so, like, the initial part of the villain song, I was like, what? Like, I had no idea what he was saying at the beginning. And so I was like, I hope this isn't critical. And it wasn't. So I was really happy about that. So just for me personally.
Okay, side note. Okay.
Yeah.
No, that was basically it. That was it. Okay.
That was my first one.
Ames, what was your first impression?
I was like, this feels like an episode, like a two-part episode that was squished together, but it's fun. And I was like slightly boogieing in my seat because every Bob's Burger episode, almost everyone, ends up with some type of a song or a callback to the song that was played in the episode, if there was one. And this one had literally a collection of characters, even if they didn't have screen time, that were dancing to the final song. And I was like, okay, I'm feeling this. Also, that yellow is very, very bright and very distinctly them, and I can't see it any other place.
I think, it's very close to, like, a Simpsons yellow. Like, I was watching it, and immediately I thought, I better not bring in, like, Homer or something. Like,
they already did that crossover, I believe.
Not for Bob's Burgers.
No, for Simpsons.
Simpsons and Family Guy, but not for Bob's Burgers. That's what I'm saying.
And Futurama. Where,
no,
yeah, they did the Futurama one. The only thing they did for Bob's Burgers was Archer and Bob's Burgers.
Recently, I saw a clip somewhere on YouTube that Homer like crashed into the restaurant, and then Tina and Louise were like, "How did he get here?"
I don't know. That was probably like an opener for The Simpsons, but they haven't done a. Okay. Anyway, back to the focus at hand. Sarah, first impressions outside of the theater. Lord above.
Kind of what intern Amy said on that I felt like a two-part episode, and it gave me callbacks to the fourth season finale, the two-part that I brought up. Mm-hmm. And that feel, but you were completely watching it fully, and it didn't shy away from my expectation going into the theater of not basically going, oh, we don't remember where we came from, and the original material and premise of the show, which
that's,
I liked.
That's true, because I feel like first impressions for me, it did feel like a two-part episode that went into just one offering. Oh my God, Spencer gave me soda and I'm burping.
I mean, you could have said no.
You didn't even hand it
How could I say no?
No.
Yeah, boundaries.
No, I can't say it. immediately after this movie, yeah, it did feel like a two-parter put into one episode, but I also felt like this movie made every attempt to do something unique in each scene that just put it right above what the expectations were for the show. Like the whole idea of pushing more with Teddy's mental relationship with Bob and Linda, pushing more on like the fish odors and understanding them, pushing more on the understanding of the carnies who work at Wonder Wharf. Mm-hmm. There was a lot going on in this movie that really kind of gave me a glimpse of behind the scenes, if it was like a real life place. And I thought that was really smart. Plus, it really gave... I mean, I'm going to be honest. It gave a really great... it gave really great exposition on a piece of information that has been consistent throughout the series that really we haven't known too much about until they finally reveal the source of it or where it comes from. And we'll talk about that in a second. But diving in, I want to talk about the vocal performances. I feel like if you're familiar with the show, it's hard to really say whether or not if they do better in this than they do in the show, because I feel like they have to kind of be consistent throughout the whole thing. But I really have to say something that Amy mentioned about the music. I feel like either they got better or technology has gotten much more sneakier, because I couldn't tell if like there was auto-tune or if they actually, like, Kristen Shaw sounds really good in this one. And she's the woman who plays Louise in the film, or in the series. And I felt like she just really brought it. Like, I don't know. What did you guys think?
Which one of us do you guys think?
Anybody who speaks up first.
So that's you.
That one.
I agree on that because just as homework, I was watching like interviews that they did before the movie was released, and some of the actors were like, yeah, we've had to get used to singing. H. John Benjamin mm-hmm. brought it up, but surprisingly, Eugene said that he has to like sing the word and then stop, and he goes, I'm not a good singer, so they've just had to like edit it.
Which Eugene Merriman is the one who plays Gene. So poor guy. What about you, Amy? What did you think about the vocal performances as a whole?
Specifically
music, whichever.
Well, as a whole, they stayed true to where they were coming from, but when it came to the music, you could hear where people had put in some additional work, where the arrangements had changed, where it wasn't just like they knew they were gunning for like musicals, and it was really interesting to see, especially considering that between John Roberts, who plays Linda, and then Dan Mintz,
yeah,
who's Tina, watching the juxtaposition of them vocally, also Christian Schaal's like vocals from the opening number to mm-hmm. the other number that she's in, like not excessively but largely in, that was like range, girl.
Yeah.
Range. It was dang.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Christian Schaal is really somebody who I feel like from that first time we see her really kind of step into the vocal singing portion of the show till now, it's like, I don't want to say it's day and night, but you can see the progression, hear the progression. Yeah,
definitely.
So, Spencer, what about you? Any vocal performances that really stood out to you, or what did you think?
Well, I kind of want to say everyone did, because like everyone's speaking voice is not a voice that I would assume would be good at like something that you'd find a pleasant experience to listen to in the singing format.
Is this the Hooked on Phonics kind of thing here? Like, Hooked on Phonics worked for me, so it's like...
Yeah, so...
I can see it now. The next episode, Bob's Burgers. You can be a vocal artist too.
No, everyone does a really good job, and it's one of those things where like... I'm reminded that like there's a lot of talented people on this like movie slash TV show.
Yeah, I mean, you got people like we said, H. John Benjamin, who has a huge history in vocal performances. Mm-hmm. Kristen Schaal, this is actually, I believe, her seventh animated film that she's done.
Aww.
You have people like the big names like Kevin Klein and Zach Galifianakis, which, be completely frank, intern Amy has a huge man crush.
Massive crush. I don't care how old this man gets. I have loved Kevin Klein since his Pirates of Penzance days, where he was the pirate king and he was opposite Angela Lansbury. Oh, but he's still my heart. Also, he does a really great
So film. If anybody out there had any hopes of reeling in intern Amy...
Sorry, my heart belongs to Kevin.
Unless it's Kevin Klein, you're out of luck.
Kevin Klein.
But like I said, Zach Galifianakis, we got we got to see Fanny again, who is played by Jordan Peele.
Yeah, that's right.
Which Jordan Peele does an actual physical performance of kind of like Fanny in his sketch comedy show with Keegan-Michael Key. Mm-hmm. I don't think she's called Fanny, but I don't know. It's dead on the same. The same voice, same everything. It's scary. Yeah, we got a lot of great individuals in the film. We don't get a chance to see the recurrence of Bill Hader's Mickey. We do have another person who's playing Mickey as well. I believe there's a few others who are not in the vocal cast. Namely one specific, because he got fired, which is the vocal talent of... I don't even remember his name.
Jimmy Pesto.
No, well, that's the character's name.
Jay Johnson.
Jay Johnson, who is no longer with the cast due to his political views and whatnot. Sucks to be you. But it's interesting how we have a huge plethora of different voices and different performances in this one, and it was really good. But I feel like there was one hiccup in this movie, and I feel like this is something that I'm surprised Amy hasn't said yet in terms of hiccups, but we don't really get a lot of Kevin Klein singing.
Which is, so that's been something later in life that usually does happen. So even consistently through the television show and through the seasons, you don't get a lot of Kevin Klein singing. And when you do, he is, much like Julie Andrews after her surgery, talk singing, which he can sing, but it's kind of like, I don't know if they can afford.
Well, he sang in the season four season finale.
Yeah, he sang for that one. He sang for the
Oh, Good Things Are Good. Or
yeah.
And
for the Topsy episode.
Autopsy. He and, did one where they had
But
the,
also the question is, can you afford Kevin Kline singing in your movie? Because the man is money.
If you got him speaking, why can't you have him singing?
There could be something in
different
his contract.
Different price tiers.
Yes.
What is this, Fiverr here? Come on.
This is a convention.
This is right? a convention.
$5 to talk, $10 to sing.
Oh my gosh.
Just for you.
Do you want that voice? That voicemail? Like, hi, this is in your voicemail. It's $150.
You guys are sounding singing. Like accountants over there.
He was kind of singing.
They didn't catch in that, the, Sarah.
Yeah. When they were playing the organ, he was kind of hum singing, but other than that, he wasn't singing.
Oh, he did the singing in that one episode where they were going to make that underground speakeasy.
Yeah, that's what I was like, about to say.
The banana song or something.
The one that he really did want to sing, the banana song.
And that's when we were introduced to the cousin. Yeah.
Who's the lawyer. Grover.
Grover Fishoder.
This movie is very interesting. The premise of the movie, we kind of went into it vaguely, but the whole idea is, there's a sinkhole that happens in front of the shop or in front of the restaurant, and when they're in the midst of filling it back up, they find a dead body who is already decomposed, and so they have to figure out that police think it was Calvin Fishoder, and they apparently are going to charge him with murder, blah, 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 and so the family has to figure out a way to save Mr. Fishoder from going to jail because he's the landlord, and if someone else goes in there, the bank is going to take away everything that they have dear. So that's kind of the basic premise of it. But I do have to say, even though in the simplest of terms what this plot is about, there's a lot of unique character development and complexity in this film. Mm-hmm. I have to admit, I thought the writing was going to be very basic. I thought it was going to be very generic. But each one of the characters that we see has an arc for themselves. I mean, you have the story of... Tina wanting to obviously give something special to Jimmy Jr. Before the summer starts. You have Gene, who is wanting to do something unique and be something better and find purpose in his music. Louise has a big arc where she doesn't want to be seen as a baby anymore. Bob and Linda are trying to save the restaurant. Teddy wants to be in like a polygamy relationship with Bob and Linda. There's a lot going on, and I have to applaud them for that. Like, the writers of this film really went to the nth degree to make the movie more than just a show. Like, run length time, yeah, it's probably about a two or three parter episode, but for story wise, this is like a whole season worth of stories put into one film. I don't know, what do you think, Spence?
Yeah, I think they did a good job of, like, just expanding it to a theatrical release. Because sometimes when TV shows do that, like, it gets into that made-for-TV category, and then you're kind of like, I don't need to pay extra for this.
Yeah, I felt like that for The Simpsons movie. Like, The Simpsons movie felt like it was just another episode that didn't really deviate from... what they would typically do for the shows.
The only thing that there was a deviation on that movie was, well, actually on this movie as well, was animation style. Like, I haven't seen Bob's Burgers consistently for a while, so I don't know if they made a big jump in the last couple of years, but like, I noticed like everyone has shadowing effects.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, looks super good.
And there was even certain parts where they used 3D effect work in some of the buildings and so forth. The only big difference that I know of for The Simpsons, because they always wanted to push the envelope, was they showed Bart Simpson's wiener for like a millisecond. In the very beginning, when he's riding his skateboard and he's lost his shorts, and they literally like show intentional parts where they're blocking out certain parts, and then they don't show a part where they show his, you know, wang. And it's like, it's weird, but like, it's like, why? I mean, the man should be like, Bart should already be like in his 30s, but still,
he's older than us.
Yeah, no joke.
He is older than
45,
us.
I think,
at least. But I still feel like there was a lot more to this movie in terms of story wise. My next question for you guys in terms of like the story, and I guess this is more directed towards like Sarah, because Sarah's the more experience with the Bob's Burgers. In terms of the other episodes, do you think this fits more as, you know, like a season capper, or do you think this is something that they could have actually ended the series on?
Season capper would work really well. Ending it right there, that's the thing with Bob's Burgers as a whole, like kind of not as a whole, you have the space of they can kind of be like, and this was the last episode, and you would know that the family's still thriving, they're living, like unless the last episode is Bob goes broke, then he's holding on by a string.
That would be interesting. Bob goes broke. And I felt like with this one, so I had mentioned earlier there was not a MacGuffin, but there was a consistent item in the series that gets talked about in this movie, and that's Louise's hat, which we've seen from the very beginning that she's always worn and she's been hyper protective of. Mm-hmm. And
even with the episode with when Logan took her hat and threw it away, she was using other objects to stand in for her
head. I feel like Sarah just wanted to mention this because of the other junior film Lost for Logan.
I have problems with him right now. We're not going to talk about it.
Okay. Well, wow. Yeah.
My deep abiding love for Kevin Kline, and there's rustlings in the junior film Lossifer's ranks.
Right? Yeah. Got to check in with those guys murmurs. And see what's... Like, I just call them up and tell them to show up. They're like... yeah, because I feel like the story... This film is like the epitome of that arc for Louise, because she gets called a baby at the very beginning of the episode. She really takes it personally. And it goes on this whole conversation of whether or not in her mind, and we know what's happening because she's struggling with it, as to whether or not she should keep the hat moving forward.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, and maybe I should, it's going to be in the notes, or it's going to be in the title, spoilers. But I feel like the conversation they have at the climax of the film, when everything else is going on and she says that she's not brave and she had to wear this hat because, you know, so that she could be brave, and they completely like drop the whole, you know, feels scene on you with Bob saying, you know, that, oh, you know, your mom made that for you, and she made it for you because it was like the one my mom used to wear. And I'm like, what?
Yes.
And if you've watched the series, you've seen maybe glimpses and pictures, but you've never actually seen the mom in an actual live, you know, situation within the series. And Bob talks about how his mom, when he was younger, used to have this purple hat that she would wear, or pink hat that she would wear.
Pink winter hat she would wear regardless of the weather.
Yeah, and he had Linda make it because it was kind of like something that she would wear. And it's like, oh my God, there is sentimental value for this dang hat that you see everywhere at conventions nowadays. Mm-hmm. Everybody does the green dress and the bunny ear hat.
And Coochie
Kopi. And the Coochie Kopi and your Louise from Bob's Burgers. But now it's like, I'm wondering how many people are actually looking at the ears and like...
Well, and I think it also added to it that Linda states, and I had extra yarn, and you liked rabbits, so I made ears.
Yeah.
And it was that entire thing. And then when Bob says, it's in a way, it's like you met her, and I forget that you never did. And I'm like, oh, that dirty. You did me so dirty in the feels right there, man.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh. It was so well-timed in everything that was going on, and it placed such a significance. It wasn't just, oh, we're in trouble and we're trying to fix it. It gave completion, and it also opened a door for people to ask more questions and maybe get more answers, because...
Well, like, and the unique thing, not to cut you off, but the unique thing about that particular story arc, we've been getting more in the series, we've been getting more conversations about Bob's mom, because we have yet to see any, we haven't found out like what happened to her, we never found out what's going on or what had happened, why she's no longer here. But in the last, I think it was in the last season's Christmas episode, we have his dad tell Tina the story about when he went camping one time. And the whole episode is like based around like, oh, well, it was probably about when he met aliens, or it was probably about this, or whatever. And when he comes and he finally sits and talks to Tina, he tells her this, that was the time when I when I went out, or when I first met your mom, or went on a date with your mom?
When went on a date with your mom and going was camping. Going to propose, I believe.
No, no, no. It was after the fact, how she handled herself with the falling tree and whatever, that he realized he was going to marry this woman. Aww. And it's like, oh my gosh. And that was one of the first times we get a chance to actually see his mom.
Yeah.
That's why I say, like, we've seen her in previous episodes. But now the coupling of this whole, oh, not only do we know that she was a very vital part of Bob's life, mm-hmm. but he intentionally, the creators and Bob as a character, intentionally made a way where she never really left him, mm-hmm. nor did he ever go without. Like, she's always been a part of the series. Yeah. And that really does change things on its head for how you view the whole series. Because I believe I was talking to Sarah before we started the episode, and Sarah had mentioned that their grandpa actually says something to Louise.
And it's also, so another thing was how he looks at her. Like, so we've already established that when Bob had, like, oh no, what if, like, who am I going to pass down the restaurant to? And he goes, because he was talking to all the all the children. And Luis is like, yeah, I just don't really care. Like, you and Grandpa did it out. And then I believe, like, something not drastic happened, but she genuinely cares and wants to, like, kind of carry it down.
I think it was the episode where they were talking about the martial arts movie.
Yeah,
because they have that special moment off to the side, and they talk about it.
There's really good episodes where it's like Bob does not, like, just push all of his love to one child. He equally disperses it, and there's a lot of good episodes where it's like his relationship with Jean, Tina, and then the Luis ones are fun because he's so excited to share.
You can see, and it makes, like I said, in hindsight, it makes a lot more sense after the fact that Bob has this unique relationship with Louise throughout the entire series. But you had mentioned, Sarah, about something that the grandpa had said to Louise about, like, you had always been my favorite or something.
I forget what he said, but he walks up and he says something to her, and then he rustles her hat, and she's like, yeah, and trying to fix the ears. Yeah. But it was the way he looked at her, and he was just like,
but like I said, people are going to be going back because of this film. People are going to be going back and re-examining each episode that has to do with, you know, that hat and whatnot. And mind you, we're kind of focusing a lot on the hat because there's a lot more going on. But I feel like it's such a big part of not only fans of the film, but fans of the series as a whole, especially when it comes to, we were talking about lore earlier, when it comes to the lore of this series. This is another, like, step towards really understanding who Bob's mom was. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, we have this detective caper type thing that's going on, trying to figure out, you know, did Mr. Fishorder really kill the individual who's, you know, who was buried under Bob's restaurant or whatever, Bob, in front of Bob's restaurant. And I think that was a really fun play. We don't get a lot of, I realize now, we don't get a lot of time with Kevin Kline, and I feel like Amy's a little salty because of that.
No, I'm okay. I have other means to watch. I appreciate it. So this is not the Thanksgiving episode where they go to the fish odors, which is, like, very heavily Kevin Kline.
That was
Kline.
Fun.
It was great. But this was so evenly dispersed, I think, for screen time among the school and the characters at the school, even though it wasn't a whole bunch. Like, we get a little bit, but the focus is the family. Mm. And the push, like, it's almost like intentionally we're following the family. But it's kind of like when you're in the spotlight and you have the halo effect and the other people kind of pass and move through it, they're still illuminated, but it doesn't detract from the central story or the central person that you're following. So while there is not a whole bunch of Kevin Kline in this, the fish odor story I really appreciated because, once again, we see Felix and we see Calvin, and then you get Grover just kind of out of, not as fully left field, but they're all there, they're interacting, and it's way more fun to see that interaction where it's not completely, like, they're not at each other's throats.
Mm-hmm.
because it has it feels even kind of more organic.
Yeah.
And they're not doing what they do in the series where it's always Calvin pitted against Felix and there's always something derogatory. At this point they're kind of like, we're banding together.
Yeah, that's true.
And we're going off and we're still a family. And also, I completely forgot that Felix lives in a tree house modeled after the main house.
It was brought up in the Hunger Themes-esque episode, actually.
And that's where I was just like, oh, I forgot I want this tree house. Spencer's like, I could go for a tree house.
I could if it looked like that.
Heck yes. Right? You get your little dumb waiter with all your food coming back and forth. Oh, yes.
Spencer, what were your thoughts in terms of the way this movie kind of led into that final act for almost like a Die Hard-esque type of situation where they had to stop the bad thing from happening and everything? Just the whole way that whole last act played out.
I actually really liked it. Even though this is before this, I like how both Linda and Gene couldn't help but push like the buttons on the like, thing. And it was ridiculous.
The ouchie button.
Yeah, but no, actually... When like it seemed like they were rushing up for that, I was like, I don't know if like a lot of me during this movie was like, I don't know if you can pull this off, and then they do pull it off, and I'm like, oh, that's really great. And so this is me going, I don't know if you can make this seem as exciting as it is, and no, they did, like,
and they pull it off,
yeah. Like, so this is mostly a story about me watching this movie being a doubter of them, and then them proceeding to do exceedingly well,
yeah. Which, oddly enough, I mean, it's interesting how the series, and I know we kind of go back to the series, but it is based on it, mm-hmm. or it is actually it in a movie form. The series is very hit or miss as to whether or not they succeed in their endeavors, which I think is a big part of the organic, I guess you want to call it, as Amy put it, the organic chemistry with that family. And to be quite frank, some of their more recent episodes, in fact, the last season finale, which was a two-parter, they actually play off of a riff of Blade Runner and Grease. And it sounds weird, but it's funny.
It works.
I actually saw it. Spencer, it works. like, you're like, it's not going to work. And you think, like, there are so many parts in this where... Even the little bit of Bob's Burgers that I've watched, I was like, oh, I remember that from an episode, like being able to see it where everything kind of, again, organically and naturally fit. And it didn't feel like they were trying to overload Easter egg you like another movie that we saw.
Yeah, that's actually very true.
And it was...
Wait, hold on. Now I want to know, what other movie did we saw?
Rescue Rangers.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Which was last week's episode. Episode 317. Yes. Just wanted to put that
You mean
there.
An oversaturation frustration? Yeah. Yes.
That's what the title was, Spencer. You're looking at me like you're not sure.
No, I know.
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
But so, like, it was so delightful to be able to kind of go, oh, they're making mention of, like, the one-eyed vipers, the biker gang, and
the one-eyed snakes, so with Critter. Snakes.
Yes, and and regular size Rudy.
He's always just been there.
But there's things that it was...
I need a bench runner.
It was nice to see. And they didn't forget their roots. Yeah. They didn't go too big for their britches. They didn't pull a Simpsons movie where they're like, oh, we're going bigger.
We're going to put a dome around Springfield, and then you have to go and do it like... Simpsons is always outlandish,
yep.
And it's what you come to expect. Mm-hmm. This didn't seem outlandish. It seemed very feasible.
Especially for their universe. I think that was the thing, that regular day happenings, this made sense, that it was ridiculous, but it was not uncommon to have this happen in their town with these people with this situation. And I think that grounded this movie in such a great way. Like, I could go watch it again.
True.
Yeah, very true. I'm going to buy it when it comes out. Like, a really good investment. I have the money for it.
So it's an investment for me?
talking about the way the film wrapped up and everything, were there any highlights or issues you guys had with the movie? Spencer?
Besides that one thing I mentioned already where I couldn't understand what people were singing about. I'm sorry. I know it's a me thing. It's fine.
No,
that
villain
song was really hard to like understand until maybe halfway through, where the octave changed.
He dropped, and I was like, perfect. Like, I don't know why you didn't do that from the beginning, but perfect.
As much as Spencer is still slowly tiptoeing into becoming a fan of musicals or movies with music specifically throughout it, it is true. You are 100% right. This wasn't the exact, like, 100% hit the head on the nail or for this song, but I felt like a lot of the other songs really did hit it out of the park in terms of its expectation from what we had with the episode where Bob gets glued to the toilet.
Bad stuff happens in the bathroom.
Bathroom.
You have the episodes that you brought up for season 12 that were their cap, which was Dystopian Tina's song.
Yeah, that one was good.
It fits so well.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can see where that's a big issue, because actually, now that you mention it, I'm, like, recollecting. I'm like, yeah, there was a little upset. Was there any highlight for you, Spence?
Okay, I guess I'll consider this a highlight. So, I kind of forgot.
Because the ending of the movie?
You know? I kind of forgot about how tied into musicals Bob's Burgers are. And so, like, when they started singing at the beginning, I was like, oh, right. And then, like, as we get into it, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm into this song.
Yeah.
I like these songs. So, yeah, like, good, really good songs throughout this movie.
True. That one villain song, which, yeah. What about you, Amy? Any highlights or issues?
Highlights, I loved getting a little more of the secret passageways, like the fish odors, the under pier, was so dumb and brilliant. Also, that suggestive tweaking of the statue to get to the under pier. It was so fun and so really unexpected. It made me laugh, like, legitimately out loud. And my theater wasn't very packed, but there were people close enough that I snorted really loud and they looked at me and I was like, I'm sorry. It was great. And then,
like, I paid money. I'm here to laugh.
I paid money. I'm here.
But I will shush you if you get loud.
And then so you know. I think for me, you're shushing me. And then she's progressively grown on me. Tina, but really everybody says I'm a Linda, so it happens.
I could see that.
Yeah,
I totally can't see that.
Yeah, but I think in this,
although Linda does, like, bring coffee all the time, and just,
oh my gosh, oh my gosh,
hashtag no coffee.
Oh my gosh. But what I was gonna say is, I think one of the highlights for me was that moment where Linda literally just she doesn't let it all hang out. But we start at the top of the movie where she is the perpetual cheerleader. She's the look on the bright side. Everything's going to be okay. Bob gets to be the grump, but not Linda. And then we have that moment in the third act where Linda's like, nope, this isn't happening. And suddenly they have that, Bob has that shift and he's like, oh my gosh. You're supposed to be the happy one. It's not me. And he's like, crud, is this what it feels like? I'm sorry. I'm going to be the positive one. And I was like, oh, somebody gets it. And it was really great. And also all the little babies is so dumb. But as a parent, I literally, there are days that I just want to be like, I want to kiss your face. I want to kiss your face. So yeah, Linda was really great. And Tina was, like, her arc was so fun to watch, the juxtaposition of her fantasy life and her fantasy Tina life and regular Tina life. But I'm going to leave it there just in case anybody wants to expound further on Almighty Tina. Junior Philosopher, you're pensively gazing at me, breathing deeply into your microphone. Is there a problem?
So one of my issues, and it's just with watching the show, and being around the same age as Tina, and sort of just being like, I don't have a lot of crushes on dudes, but the fact of the matter, not to go like, oh, she needs to get over Jimmy Jr.
She needs to date Zeke.
She needs, yes. Perfect. He already said that he likes her. He's like, he goes, in the future, I'm going to find you. I will. You don't think it's going to happen. It will. But
foreshadowing, Spencer.
Yeah. Oh, no, it was in a good episode. Sorry, but my main issue was not the fact that at the very end of the movie, Jimmy Pesto Jr. comes up and he's like, I found this on the beach while I was with Zeke. And I'm like, we all know it wasn't you, sir. But It was probably Zeke. But my thing is that, like, I'm excited for Summer Tina. Good on her. I love her. I relate to the character, like, bit. But my main issue was just character-wise for Jimmy Jr., him just being a jerk and being like, haha, on and off again. But a highlight that I liked about the movie was, like Intern Amy said, and like Filmosopher Eddie said, the kind of smooth, not transition, but having references and things that have been going on in the town and slash city, and it feeling just natural. Like, we had one of Tina's previous ex-boyfriends who graffiti ghosts outside of the One-Eyed Snakes. We had Critter being like, hey, kids. There was a whole bunch of those subtle, not subtle, but also just felt natural interactions. You had everyone at the school. You had Mr. Franz and Miss LeBons being like, yeah. And Miss LeBons, which was a, like, evolving relationship between her and Luis, being like, yeah, I really want to get this hat for my little cousin, niece?
My niece.
For my niece. She would love it. And, like, the series is so good. And you could watch this movie without seeing the series and still get some of that impact. And then when you watch the series, it's just good. Good. Pass. Because if not, I'm going to go on a rant and it's going to get really confusing real fast.
I will say that as someone who does not watch the series, this was not that hard to follow along with.
Like, yeah. No doubt. Yeah. I feel like that's one of the best things they did for this particular franchise is create a film that doesn't actually have to give you backstory enough to understand, you know, the implications of what's going on. You can understand, you know, somebody who might have a huge crush but doesn't know how to expound upon it. You may, you know, relate to somebody who is small and may feel inferior because of her size or her age, whatever, and doesn't want to feel like that. Like, there's so many facets of this movie that it doesn't take away from the people who do enjoy the series or the people who are just going in to see the movie by itself. You know, so I do appreciate that. Like I said, if there was any particular issue that I had with this movie, I actually was hoping, I was kind of hoping there was going to be a little bit more characters in it, because Bob's Burgers is such a vast.
You wanted Marshmallow, didn't you?
There was like Marshmallow. I wanted to hear the guy on skates that goes by is like,
he went by. He
no, just but didn't you didn't hear him. No.
Well,
he
we also didn't see Gail either until she was. Yeah, in, Gail. She was in the credits dancing.
Yeah,
I mean Marshmallow. I understood because the original voice actor for her decided to step back because he felt it wasn't deemed fit for him to play a trans character and not being trans, so he wanted to pass it off to someone who could properly represent. Yeah.
So, but if there was one particular highlight that I liked about the movie, I really liked the sequence where Gene is imagining him playing on the wharf, and the aliens come through, and they're like, "Yeah, you should stop that." In such a great and funny alien robotic voice, I thought that scene was hilarious. That's so great. I liked it, but. I do have a roundtable question for you guys, because we did mention, obviously, Jimmy Pesto is no longer, or the actor himself is no longer going to voice Jimmy Pesto. And we've seen that the show has no problem recasting certain vocal talents for the series in the effort to create continuity. Obviously, we mentioned that for Mickey, like Sarah mentioned for Marshmallow. I'm pretty sure Marshmallow is a great character. I'm pretty sure they're going to bring somebody in to voice them. So the question for the table is, if you could cast any one of your choosing for Jimmy Pesto, seeing as obviously he will need to be recast, who would you choose?
James Earl Jones.
Whoa.
Mm. Because it's crazy.
It is, but it's brilliant.
Only if people have the context of why the last guy left and you just like replace him with that, with like that regal voice.
With an iconic African-American actor is like, yes. that's actually an interesting one. Amy, you have to follow up with that.
Well, the thing is, I had always thought ever since Jimmy, original Jimmy's voice actor has been removed, that they were going to axe off Jimmy's character entirely, and the children were going to be with the mom, and she was going
and
to...
And with her new boyfriend, Alan.
Her new boyfriend, but then you have... Who's Jimmy Pesto's best friend?
Or Zeke?
Trev.
Trev?
Wait, you mean Jimmy Pesto.
Yeah, so Trev, not Junior, but anyway, he was going to take over Jimmy Pesto's, the restaurant, and then that way you have Jimmy Pesto Jr. and Andy and Ollie, because those are his brothers,
those
right?
Are twin brothers.
And then they're with the mom, so we have a new element coming into town. Or if we are no longer for the Jimmy Jr. and Tina train, I mean, we could just gently move them out, and Zeke could have a chance. So I'm
give my boy a chance.
I
don't think they're gonna get rid of Jimmy Jr.
So if they bring in the mom, it would create a complete different like opportunity for diversity in that storyline, and I think it would be great because I cannot top James Earl Jones ever.
So you don't have a pick, is what you're saying?
I can't top James Earl Jones, Eddie.
Well, if you have a pick, though.
No, I don't.
Okay,
it's just James Earl Jones. Kevin Kline's already in the show, so I can't do anything else either.
Sarah, who would you choose?
I'm still trying to figure out one because you can't top James Earl Jones, Sally.
See what you did.
Man, I thought everyone was going to have real choices. Mine was kind of a joke.
You want Seth Rogen to come in?
I mean, honestly, there's still plenty on the table.
Guy Fieri.
I feel like
Guy Fieri.
Oh God, we don't need Flavortown to come to Bob's Burgers.
Oh no,
he could open up a shop at called Flavortown right across from the street.
He can guest star like how.
But the thing is, we're not replacing Jimmy.
Well, now I want to with Guy.
Yeah, we have opportunities. Could you imagine Jimmy went in for a surgery, woke up, and he sounded like Guy Fieri? It's more possible you'd sound like James Earl Jones.
Okay.
Guy Fieri.
So you said Guy Fieri. I mean, at least she had an option. Miss across the table who doesn't bring coffee, didn't have anything.
Hey, I brought Chinese food. It was not burgers. We've established this.
So I have two choices. And I feel like these are the only two that really do count. But now I'm thinking there might be a third because of Spencer. Thanks a lot. Mm-hmm. So my first thought was you could go the route of Ricky Gervais. I feel like Ricky Gervais would be a fun... Because Jimmy Pesto is always making fun of Bob. And if Ricky Gervais came in and was just the salty... You know, individual who carries that on, that would be interesting. My other thought was I would love to see Jimmy Pesto voiced by Danny DeVito.
Oh,
so
that's good. That's better than Peter Dinklage, but that's so good.
And my third choice, and just because of Spencer, I would love to see Jimmy Pesto voiced by Morgan Freeman. I feel like the man who has bugged and insulted Bob for all this time now has the sultry smoothness of one Morgan Freeman.
So dirty. So dirty.
Yeah. So, Ames, you don't want one more crack before we...
I said Peter Dinklage.
You said that was better than Peter Dinklage.
Yeah, because that was my other vote. I couldn't remember. And I was like, Peter Dinklage might be an interesting conversation.
That it is. So, wrapping this whole thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table. And does the film pass or fail? And how many monocles? We're going to start at the way end of the other side of the table with Amy.
So, this film passes for me. If you have not seen the series, feel free to take a brief, like, pick a couple of episodes. You can almost even pick them at random
and kind of watch them.
Yeah.
The thing is, Hulu actually has curated lists for different things. Like they have the list for the Thanksgiving episodes, Christmas. The list for the Christmas episodes, and the musical episodes.
Ooh. So definitely take a spin through Hulu's curated lists. You will be delighted at what you find. And this is not only it's not even a love letter to the series. It feels great. And if this was a series full ending, like this was where they were stopping, I would still be okay with that. So I'm going to give it a 4.7 out of 5.
Okay. Spencer.
okay. This movie passes for me. As someone who's not seen lots of it, you know, really easy to follow. Also, like, you only really need to watch, like, even two episodes, really, to get a feel if this is up your alley. Mm-hmm. And even with that, that sets up enough for you to, like, just cop right into this. So, yep. Like, it's a really easy watch. For me, I'm going to give it a 4.5. It was really fun.
Yay. Nice. Sarah?
For me, it passes. There's a lot of things I enjoyed as someone who watched the series / watches. I gave it a 4.9, just 0.1 off, just because my girl Tina deserves better, and that's my only one thing about it. Minus like some just.
There's no saltiness there at all.
Never.
No.
Yeah, I mean,
for Tina, good job.
My girl deserves better. There's so many red flags with the man. I'm not saying because he has a lisp, but for the fact that he's
oh my gosh. Like,
no. Wow.
But for the fact that he right. was in love with a robot
okay.
rather than her.
So
oh, okay, without right. any context, this sounds hilarious.
I like this.
So because yeah, I don't even know where to go from there.
Yeah, where do you go?
What
do you think, Ed? What are your ratings?
Apparently not anywhere near there. I'm gonna pass the film. I really did enjoy the story element. I loved everything this film brought as an exclamation point, if you will, to the entire letter that Bob's Burgers the series writes. I feel like this is a great point in the story element, in the story thread of what we're learning, and I hope this really does kind of perpetuate more opportunities to dive into deeper lore of the series. In terms of monocles, I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5. I loved everything about it. There were a couple hiccups here and there, but it is a film based on a TV series, so I mean, you can only go so far and then go from there. So just don't do what The Simpsons did. We don't need to see anybody's naked parts. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. There we have over 300 episodes, allegedly, from anything from romance to action to comedy to discussions. Check us out. We got some great stuff there. filmlosophers.com. Also check us out on any streaming platform where you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Pandora, Spotify, TuneIn. You can tune in each and every one of those places. Hear us out, subscribe to us, give us a 5-star review, we deserve it. Also you can check us out on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at Filmlosophy 101. We have a great and exciting announcement to make, as we are going to be doing another awesome trivia night over at There and Back Cafe and Games on June 18th. You can head over to There and Back Cafe and Games on the Instagram to kind of get more details. We will be posting it as well on our page. So if you're in the Sacramento area, sign up. We'd love to hear your voices, your thoughts, and we'd love to see you and hang out. It's going to be a Saturday morning cartoon themed trivia.
Ooh.
Who does not want one of those? Right, Spence?
Yeah.
So, but this was a great and awesome episode. And mind you, if you haven't had a chance to check out the series, if you haven't had a chance to really dive in, or kind of like what Sarah said, if you don't have something like that where you've vegged out on or you've binged, check out the great stuff that's coming out lately as well. Like we mentioned, Prey, the new prequel series to Predator. There's a lot of great series that I know Amy's watching, mm-hmm. Spencer's watching, Sarah's watching, I'm watching. What?
I have some, but
okay. Not sure. So yeah, but we appreciate you listening in, and we hope you we hear from you next week. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Amy.
I'm Sarah.
Class dismissed.